And welcome back to the Constitutionals Podcast. I'm your host, Chad White. If you didn't know, this is the premier podcast for the website, cpluscomedy.com. Like I just said, it's a website. Go there. Episode 283. Listen, if you're watching the video, and I hope you are, and I know you're not, I see the views. You can check out a fight between my dog and cat. As soon as the episode started, theme song was playing, bam, we got right to the middle of a fight. It's a big day today, the day I'm recording this. It's the State of the Union Address. Should I just go right into it? Actually, I was finding a shirt to record in. That's what I do. I find shirts. And I wanted to, I said, what if I recorded my own rebuttal to the State of the Union? And that was the extent of that conversation with myself. When you live alone, you either talk to animals or you talk to yourself. So there you go. What else has happened? I'm making dinner, 6 p.m. I'm recording this way too late because I have to put this out before I put out another thing, which I'll talk about at the end. I'm making dinner. I'm getting I'm going to make smash burgers. So I'm getting my ground turkey ready, putting them in the balls. I made four nice juicy sized balls. Two for tonight, two for, I don't know, maybe tomorrow, maybe Saturday. And definitely not Sunday. I don't think they can last that long. And I'm watching Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the TV show. I enjoy the movie. I love the movie with Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. RIP to that relationship. And speaking of breaking up relationships, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and also the creative relationship between Fleabag creator and Donald Glover. It's very interesting. I like that show a lot. The aesthetic, the way they talk to each other. The thing is, Donald, I think he wrote it along with, I could just pull this stuff up. Mr. and Mrs. Smith 2024. I should probably turn that off. He wrote it with Francesca Sloan, created with Francesca Sloan. They did an excellent job. Oh, it was a 1996 TV series. I did not know that. Starring Scott Bakula and Maria Bello and Roy Dotrice. Anyway, I like the movie. I like the show. There's a lot of guest stars in it. It leans heavily on the white guest stars, but you know, neither here nor there. And it had a lot of good twists and turns, I thought it was very funny and very charming. And I hope they bring it back for a second season. I'm not a fan of shows ending on cliffhangers. I think we need to get past that, especially in the streaming state. I don't watch this show, but the Avatar, the new Avatar show, the last Airbender show that came out on Netflix. Netflix is known to end shows at season three, a lot of times before. But at season three, because that's when their contracts renew, they decided to go ahead and renew Avatar because it debuted to huge numbers, as shows on Netflix typically do, rather. And it debuted to huge numbers, and they renewed it for two more seasons, bringing it to as many seasons as the animated series had, three. And they're each going to follow the same books that Avatar followed. This is me looking on Wikipedia earlier today. I have great memory for this. Again, I can't do math at all. So they're going to do the entire series again, but in live action. The show, the cartoon had 61 episodes. This is only going to have, I don't know, probably, you know, 20 or so. And then I assume they're probably going to move on to Korra, which is the follow-up series. But for all the complaining I do about Netflix, at least that show is going to have an ending. Compared to so many other shows that just don't. And like, there are so many shows on my, I've mentioned this before, I have a Notion where I write my notes down, but it also has everything I'm watching and everything I have watched so far in the past, like, year. It's a lot. But how many shows on there have been canceled? It's crazy. It's really, truly disturbing. Not disturbing. I don't like to use that. Excuse me. But it's so odd to see shows that are clear, that are on here, that are canceled. I think Agent Elvis is canceled. You know, there's a kid's cartoon on here that I'm never going to watch. That I watched one episode of and I said, I'm not for me. But there's limited series on here. But then there's also these shows that happen to last one or two seasons because they didn't get the viewership. And it just goes back to me always saying, it shouldn't matter about viewership. It should matter about, are there people watching and liking it? And can you tell an entire story? Simon Kinberg did the Mr. and Mrs. Smith movie? Oh, man. Well, a lot of people, Doug Liman, whatever, directed it. Akiva Goldsman was one of the producers. Music by John Powell. And edited by Michael Tronick? Whoa! It's so stupid. Anyway, I hope this show gets renewed and gets to tell a story it needs to tell. And, you know, pretty much every show. Unless it's astronomically horrible. Then let it finish. Oh, God. Simon Kinberg wrote and produced The 355, which is a movie I wanted to see so badly. It was knocked out of theaters almost immediately. And then when it came to whatever streaming service, I watched it and I was like, oh boy. Oh no. All right, let's get started with the show because I want to eat and I'm hungry. This is written by Jeffrey A. Trachtenberg over at the Wall Street Journal. Book startup pitches authors a novel deal, $0 upfront, bigger profits. We're seeing this in the new book industry. They typically went more often than not. If somebody is getting offered a book deal, they're going to be offered, again, this happens a lot, but not all the time. You're offered a boatload of money and you have a certain amount of time, maybe 2, 3, 4 years to write a book. And you just have to show, you know, they'll pay you up front. They'll give you made up number, $2 million. And then you have to write your book. And it's very interesting. And that's how it happens. But now, book publishers are trying to say, hey, we're not going to pay you anything, but we'll give you more profits in the end. James Clear, who wrote Atomic Habits, you might have seen that book all over the place. It's probably still on the New York Times bestselling list. Signed a deal recently with Authors Equity, a startup primarily financed by writers that promises authors the lion's share of profits but won't pay them any advance. And that's what the $2 million up front is, in advance. I mentioned that it's what traditional publishers will pay you a lot of money up front. It also runs counter to a trend seen in the streaming industry where companies lure talent with even ever larger upfront payments at the expense of back-end royalties. So I mentioned Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You know, Donald and Francesca, there's a chance that they are producers. They are going to get paid a lot more. And they also directed episodes. But if they weren't producers, if they were just like, if Donald was just a star and Francesca was the creator, then he wouldn't get as much. He'd get, you know, streaming royalties, and that's pretty much it for acting. But if you're a producer director, you get streaming royalties, and then some. Authors Equity was founded by Madeline McIntosh, the former chief executive of Penguin Random House US. Said the startup is adjusting to the changing dynamics of the book market in which some writers have more power than the publishers. Self-promotion comes in every form. There's TikTok now. We've got other internet things like YouTube. I've seen commercials for, who's that author that writes books? Hold on. Bill Clinton book. What's the book he wrote with James Patterson? I see James Patterson commercials for that one book. What's that one book? He writes books all the time. James Patterson book. I just typed in James Patterson book. I want to say 2023. You probably had like 20 at that point. Crosshairs? Is that the one? I don't know. That's the newest one. Who cares? Book sales in the U.S. fell 2.6% last year to 767.3 million copies, according to Circana BookScan. But that doesn't include ebooks or audiobooks. McIntosh said Authors Equity hasn't set a limit on how many titles it will eventually release annually, but expects it to be in the realm of 25, which is smaller than what traditional publishers and do. And it's also probably smaller than what James Patterson does. Authors Equity is going to pay between 60 and 70% of each book's profit to its authors, which is significantly higher than they would earn with traditional publishers. I like the idea. I think it's great that people are going to be able to own what they are and what they write and everything. It's fascinating to see. Is that a ladybug? All right, it fell. I wasn't trying to kill it, but I was trying to knock it off the wall. It did fall. And I think it was a baby ladybug. A baby bug. But everybody's in this point where they're trying to, I'm trying to adjust the light. I'm so distracted. Oh my God. Everybody's in this point where they're trying to own everything they are. And I think it's important to own your music rights. Own the videos, own everything, own the gaming rights, own all that stuff, because this is how these companies are making money. Netflix is putting out another game. They've acquired Hades to put out on mobile, and it's going to be in beta form on iOS later this month, I think. But that game is already out on PC. It's already out on every console. And now Netflix has the rights for mobile. That's what you can do, though. That's what that company can do. They can go, Netflix can approach them and say, hey, this is a big game. Do you think we can help develop it for mobile? And we will take this amount of money, which is more than what you have. There we go. Let's move on. This also comes from the Wall Street Journal, written by Robbie Whelan. Disney family rebukes Nelson Peltz, praises Bob Iger in shareholder letters. The Disney family has more or less not been on the side of Big Disney when it comes to a lot of their business dealings. And if you look at somebody like Abigail Disney, she doesn't like a lot of the stuff that's happening, but she also doesn't like it when another person outside of the family is trying to come for the company. Nelson Peltz is an activist investor. If you pay any attention to this business stuff, you'll know that an activist investor is somebody who is more or less an unpaid consultant, and they'll come in to a company and they'll come in aggressively and say, hey, Disney needs to focus only on streaming, get out of theatrical, make 12 video games that are all free to play, which is a story we'll get to in a second. And just make 70 more Spider-Man movies with Sony for the next 20 years. Activist investors, they'll come in and say very dramatic stuff like that. And some of it will seem, because it's all sandwiched together, will seem right, and then others will seem just stupid. But now, the descendants of Walt Disney and his late brother Roy O. Disney released two letters addressed to Disney shareholders, backing the company and chief executive Bob Iger in their fight against Peltz and his Trian Fund management. Trian is seeking two seats on the Disney board at April's annual meeting, which would give them power, I presume. Nelson is going to nominate himself and former Disney CFO Jay Rasulo to the Disney's board. It's basically like succession, except way more family friendly, I guess. Part of the letter says, Disney is not a company that makes widgets, it makes magic. Bob Iger, his management team, and the board of directors are faithful to this magic. The Disney kids, which includes Abigail E. Disney, Tim Disney, Susan Disney Lord, and Roy P. Disney, they're grandchildrens of Walt's brother. They criticize Peltz and other activists in the company as, quote, wolves in sheep's clothing, just waiting to tear Disney apart if they can trick shareholders into opening the door for them. This, the support from the Disney kids, when I say kids, they're like 50 and 60 years old. They're old people. But the support from these Disney kids will definitely help solidify Disney's company dealings, and maybe even help with the board members and investors as well, and shareholders. It'll definitely make them seem like they make the company seem like it has more going on, and it's more set in its ways than what Nelson Peltz is putting on. I'm turning on the light. I'm turning on the living room lamp. It's getting a little dark back there. A second letter, written with less combative language and signed by Walt Disney's grandchildren as opposed to Peltz, also opposed Peltz and praised Iger's leadership, saying, quote, Bob Iger has grown this company in a modern world and he continues to maintain a balance of creativity and profit. This is, you know, remember when Bob Chapek was in charge and the company was more business focused. But before that, Iger really helped lead Disney to what it is today. I don't know how long he was in charge. Let's say 2 decades. I'm not going to say anything. Let me see. Let's go to Wikipedia and see how long Bob Iger was in charge of Disney. He's an independent. He was a chairman. In 1995, this is from Wikipedia, the Walt Disney Company purchased Capital Cities /ABC, renamed it ABC Inc., where Iger remained chairman until 1999. So he's been with Disney since 95. And he would know better than somebody like Chapek, who was appointed, and Iger came back almost kind of reluctantly to save the company because it just wasn't doing too hot. I think Iger, I like Iger a lot. I do think he has a good sense of the Disney company. I don't think he could run anything else. I don't think he could go to Warner Brothers or Paramount, and he could turn those ships around. But I there's something with Disney, even in its sanitized kind of sheened over state, that he does a good job with running the company, and that's why when he came back and kind of aggressively took it back from Chapek, I was a little bit by his side. I'm honestly like, hey, look, he did it before. Look at what he helped bring Marvel into the fold. They Marvel is now this powerhouse thing. Star Wars is now a powerhouse thing. Everything they've done, everything they touch is almost gold. I don't know how he does with theme parks, but yeah, the focus on streaming has been great. The theme parks is apparently good, according to this article. And whatever they do with ESPN is going to change the way cable is. So we don't have any response from Peltz or any of that, any of those people. A Tryon spokesperson said something, but it's not important. Tryon this is what a spokesperson said. Tryon has a track record of investing in great companies and helping them grow long term, which I mean, I'm sure that's true. I've heard Nelson Peltz's name for years now, but you know, it's not gonna. Will they be able to steer? Hey, Maverick. Sorry. Will they be able to steer a ship as big as Disney? And that's what we don't want to find out. Because look what happened to Warner Brothers. This next one comes from GameSpot, written by Eddie Mockhook. Warner Bros. Discusses, quote, volatile AAA console games and will lean into free-to-play and mobile. As if they hadn't learned anything. As if they haven't learned a dang thing. Warner Brothers is turning its gaming unit into essentially a shovelware company, putting out games like Gotham Knights and Suicide Squad, which focus on more or less looter. They're looter shooters. Come back, play over and over again with your friends, and we'll keep releasing content over and over again. The Suicide Squad's more that. The Gotham Knights is more play with your friends online, get points, I guess. I don't know. If you don't know, AAA games are big budget games. They're the God of Wars, they're the Spider-Man games, they're Gears of War, they're Halo, they're Super Mario Brothers Wonder. They're all those games, those are big. And then we've got indie games like Hades, which I mentioned before, which can sell as much as a AAA game. AAA games are meant to be tentpoles. They're meant to be the superhero movies. They're meant to be the franchises that hold up big companies like EA. I wish he would not get on the couch. I just took him outside, and I'm almost positive he stepped in pee. His pee, mind you. If you're watching the video, you just saw the dog get on the couch. And and Warner Brothers has had some good luck with AAA games. Before Gotham Knights, when Rocksteady was making good games, they made the Batman Arkham series. How did that turn into Gotham Knights? I don't know. If you play video games, you'll know what I'm talking about. Batman Arkham Asylum, Batman Arkham City, Batman Arkham Knight. Hell, even the spinoff Batman Arkham Origins, which I don't think was done by Rocksteady, but it still had the same, it was in the Arkham universe, and Batman Blackgate, is that what's called? Blackgate? Batman Arkham Blackgate? I don't know. I'm playing that on Steam Deck right now, and it's still good. Yeah. But then Gotham Knights, oh my God, I've never seen a game go from $60 to $13 so quickly. Last year, they put out Hogwarts Legacy, which sold 22 million copies and became one of the... the best-selling game of the year. But its success was never guaranteed, says Warner Bros. Discovery gaming boss J.B. Perrette. And he called the market volatile. He pointed out that one of WBD's latest big games, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, was a disappointment for the company. Yeah, it was a disappointment because people, you say it's set, the ladybug is back.
Get out of here.
I knocked it off the wall again. It's supposed to be set in the Arkham universe. It's supposed to be a spinoff of the Batman Arkham games. And it's a looter shooter. It's a thing where you play over levels again, you get higher points, and you get rewarded with better weapons. The plan going forward, he said, is to help reduce volatility by focusing on core franchises and bringing in at least some of them to the mobile and free-to-play space. They see games like, I don't know if I have any free-to-play games on my phone. I might. Let me see. Because I know I deleted a lot. They see games like Pokemon Go. They see games like Super Mario Run. No, that wasn't free to play. But they see these games and they see, hey, people won't mind paying for gems. G-E-M-S. Not like gems. Nuggets. Well, people don't mind paying for gems. $5 for 100 gems. So they can keep playing their game. So let's just keep doing that, and then we'll just keep making money versus somebody paying $70 for a video game. It's not how gamers work. They're going for the casual crowd. Hogwarts Legacy was set in the Harry Potter universe. It finally allowed people to be the wizards and witches they wanted to be, or warlocks they wanted to be. So why not continue and build off of that? Invest in the sequel, make the game bigger. People are going to come back, even if the creator is a trans hater. Rather than just launching a one-and-done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter that is a live service? That's what this Suicide Squad is, and Gotham Knights, live service, where people can live and work and build and play in the world on an ongoing basis. So they're going to take out the popular brands, not take out. They're going to look at the popular brands. Mortal Kombat, which does have two free-to-play games, I believe. as well as the console games. As more recently, they just released Mortal Kombat 1, which is a reboot of this latest series. Mortal Kombat, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, DC. There's 11 different internal game development studios. He also teased that WBD has a, quote, strategic investment plan to help make future games more successful, adding that the company just recently bought someone in on to help with the brand management and sustainability. If this guy knows anything about video games, he would know that if you look at something like Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man Miles Morales and God of War and God of War Ragnarok, I know I just named a bunch of PlayStation exclusives. Just hear me out. I'm agnostic. I don't give a hoot about what console where, because I'm going to buy it, whatever. But if he looks at any one of those games and he sees that they're all single player, they all have great world-expanding stories. A majority, I think Spider-Man 2 and God of War Ragnarok have been updated. Well, I know God of War Ragnarok, at least, has been updated with a free update that adds more to the game and to the lore. Look how much they sold. Even compared to Hogwarts Legacy. Hogwarts Legacy is still the number one game of last year. And yet, they seem to not keep that in mind or remember that. But all those games have one thing in common. They're single player. They have multiple things in common. They're single player. They're big, expansive, and they make you feel like you are in that world. They make you feel like you're that character. So why not continue doing that? Some of their games coming up include a Harry Potter Quidditch game, which I assume will be a Quidditch game. I don't know how that would happen. Harry Potter Quidditch Champions. And then they have a Wonder Woman title from the same studio that made Shadow of Mordor. Shadow of Mordor is a fantastic series. That's a Lord of the Rings. They had two great games. I had to remember if it was two or three because I do have it. Because I bought it multiple times. You know why? Because I love the games. I only bought it three times, I think. Right? All on sale. You know, let's put it $60 a pop. It just doesn't make sense to me how you would want to do something like this. And then here's another thing. This comes from Variety, written by Brian Steinberg. Warner Bros. Discovery to overhaul True TV with sports. Sets nightly block for games and more. This is something that makes more sense. True TV is a network that airs true, real-life TV. Now it currently only airs, I think, episodes of Impractical Jokers, which if you haven't been to a car dealership in the past couple of years or a doctor's office, it's kind of funny. And they even had a movie, which I have not seen. And World's Dumbest, I believe, is what the other show is called. Yes, it's true. World's Dumbest. It's an on-camera show, caught on-camera show. But at some point, they aired alongside Impractical Jokers. They aired like a magic show, a show that was like a caught-on-camera magic show, essentially. I believe a show called Teachers, maybe Tacoma FD. I don't remember if they did that or not. They aired a lot of good comedy shows on that network. For some reason, I don't know why. What else am I forgetting? True TV. I know I'm forgetting something. Tacoma FD, Adam Ruins Everything. They did 101 Places to Party Before You Die. Billy on the Street, they picked that up from Pop TV. The Carbono Effect, that's what they show. Oh, yes, and the Chris Gethard Show. And then some other shows that I would... Fast Foodies, I remember that. Friends of the People, yeah. Let's see, Hack My Life. I talked to Brooke Van Poppelen. We still follow each other on Twitter. I'm Sorry with Andrea Savage. God, what a... It's Personal with Amy Hogarth. Yeah, what a bunch of great shows. Yeah, Talk Show the Game Show, which is a great concept. I enjoyed that one too. That's about it. Prentice Penny had a show? Interesting. Now it's going to turn into... Because it's essentially, if you remember G4 TV, it turned into a network that only aired Cheaters and Cops when it was dying. and True TV only airs Impractical Jokers and World's Dumbest. But now Warner Bros. Discovery is finally getting up off their butts, and they're going to turn it into a sports network. They're going to turn it into what I've written down as their version of ESPN. A new sports schedule would likely draw broader viewership and new ad dollars to the network, and might even spur cable distributors to accord the outlet more value and further carriage contracts. If you don't know, True TV, typically they air when March Madness comes around. They're one of the networks where you can watch March Madness games. I believe they more recently have been airing simulcast NHL games. I don't quote me on that. And baseball, they've been airing baseball games as well. Because that's what Warner has a lot of buy-in to that for some reason. The sports schedule not only consists of simulcasts of NHL, MLB, and NBA matchups, though, that typically turn up on the company's flagship TBS and TNT cable networks. Warner intends to air new, quote, alternacasts that target different audiences, which is great because that's something like the Manning cast, or Stephen A. Smith has an alternate cast for some NBA games, some of the bigger ones, and both of those are on ESPN. They're also going to have a new live half-hour TNT Sports update each evening at 6 p.m., which is a great idea. This is so good, like, because the people they hire at TNT, I think, are better analysts than a lot of the people that they hire at Fox Sports. But no one beats, for my money, no one beats the people who are paid to be on the network that are just talking about that sport. So the golf network people is very true. I think the tennis people are great. And I think NFL network people are just the top tier. Cause I think Good Morning Football is my favorite sports news show. There's also going to be a new weekly program on based on social media driven clip showcase House of Highlights. They should have done this years ago. It's expected to launch March 11th, the week prior to the start of the NCAA March Madness Basketball Championship. The Impractical Jokers is going to move over to TBS. The series will continue simulcast both on True TV and TBS through early April. I don't understand why this has not been done. I would have done this when AT&T was still in charge. I would have that would have been my move. It's the smarter move. It's the best bet, and it makes the most sense. Like, what happens? Like, we can't even look back in the past because, like, what happens 10, 15 years ago? Let's go back 10 years. What happens 10 years ago when True TV is kind of what it is now, with the exception of all the shows that I named are still airing? You could have had another baseball game going on, because how many times have there been multiple baseball games? If the Braves are playing on TBS, then let's get, you know, the Orioles on the other, or whatever game is going on at the same time. Because there's more often than not like 10, 15 games going on at once. I don't know. I can't do the math. Other new programs include The Line, a nightly look at betting across multiple sports genres, 6:30. Yeah, that was a good show. That's a good idea for a show, because ESPN has ESPN Bet, I believe. I think one of their shows is a betting show. I don't know what it's called. I think ESPN Bet is the app. And Handles, which is billed as an interactive show that sifts through the top conversations on social media surrounding the night's NBA games, slated to air in late night. Handles is a show that I think is already ongoing. I think you can watch that on Max. Sports, movies, and documentaries will air in a new programming block, including The Inside Story, a look at TNT's Inside the NBA program, which is a documentary that aired, I think, last year or two years ago. And then a video version of their podcast, which Steinberg wrote as a vodcast. The Steam Room, as well as Shaq's podcast. Steam Room is hosted by Ernie Johnson and Charles Barkley, and then Shaq has a podcast. And a slate of MotoGP races will be up too. I mean, this is just something. This is the better deal. Now, how will this tie in to that new sports focused streaming venture that Fox and Disney and Warner Bros. Discovery have? That's coming out later this year. So that's, imagine it's going to have ESPN and all of those networks. It's going to have Fox Sports and all of those networks. And then it's going to have now TNT, TBS, and True TV and Bleacher Report. It's going to be a $50 package. The move is going to expand the role of Warner Sports Division, TNT Sports, which is largely known for having one of the industry's more focused rights portfolios. You're going to get NBA games, NBA, NHL, MLB, NCAA, some other stuff. I mean, I think this is just a good move all around. But how is the gaming sector so bad, and this TV sector is doing somewhat decently? The streaming sector is a little flatline for me, a little plateaued. Go back to HBO Max. No one I know calls it Max. Everybody's like HBO Max. If they went back to HBO Max tomorrow, no one would bat an eye. All right, we did it. Hey, listen. If you like what you heard here, head to the website cpluscomedy.com, where we have so many great things, including interviews with your favorite people in media. I just talked to Rob Hayes. He's a comedian who just put out his second album and his first special. I don't know if it's first special. Let's say it's his sophomore album and special. It's called Frontin'. You can find it on YouTube. You can listen to the album wherever you get it. You can watch the video version of my interview with him on youtube.com/cpluscomedy. You can listen to it literally after this episode. The next file that uploads to this RSS feed will be the interview with Rob Hayes. He's a very funny guy. Check it out. You can also on youtube.com/cpluscomedy, you can see video versions of the other podcasts I do. Late Night Lately, the Late Late Night Show, as well as, which is the Late Night podcast, as well as LinkedIn Logs, which is the job podcast, also known as the CNBC podcast. Chad NBC podcast. Chad NB Chad podcast. You can follow us on social media, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at C Plus Comedy. Follow me at Chad Black White. Listen to the other podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. And you know what? Make sure you have a good dinner tonight. Okay. This is the end of the episode, and I'm going to stop talking now. Bye.